Well, thank you so much, Susan, for your beautiful meditation. And I think it was so lovely because it really kind of brings us to that emotional point where we're willing to consider this topic of grief and loss. And I think on a beautiful spring day like this, it's for me at least, I was thinking, oh, that's the last thing I want to bring to mind. And yet, we have to remember that death happens too, just in the midst of life. So I'm going to be speaking today on the subject of grief and loss. And if we go back to the five reflections that Suze and Arv mentioned in the talks earlier this month, this week our topic really centers around the fourth reflection. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And this is a hard truth to live with, and yet it's also one of those truths that I think we all have some experience of. Our own deaths, I think, really are in many ways a mystery, but I think many of us have some familiarity with the death of someone who is close to us, was close to us, a dear friend or a family member. Or maybe if not a human, then it might be a pet who, pets are also, dear friends and family members. And even if we haven't experienced loss in the sense of death, I think we've all experienced the loss of something dear to us. A friend that moves away, a romantic partner we break up with, maybe a job and all of the friends associated with that job. So loss is really familiar to everyone, but just because it's something that we all have experienced in one form or another, that does not in any way mean that it's something that's it's easy. So I'd like to start today with a story that speaks to this topic and one that I think many of you are familiar with, and this is the Buddhist story of the mustard seed. So this is our story. Long ago, a young woman from a wealthy family named Kisa Gotami was happily married to an important man. When her only son was 1 year old, he fell ill and died suddenly. She was struck with grief and she couldn't bear the death of her only child. Weeping and moaning, she took her son's dead body in her arms and went from house to house, begging all the people in the town for news of some way to bring her son back to life. Of course, nobody could help her, but this young woman would not give up. Finally, she came across a village elder who took pity on her and advised her to consult the Buddha. Kisa Gotami, he said, we cannot help you, but you should go to the Buddha. Maybe he can bring your son back to life. So Kisa Gotami was very excited upon hearing the elder's words, and she immediately went to where the Buddha was staying. When she carried the dead child to the Buddha and told him her sad story, he listened with patience and compassion and then said to her, there is only one way to solve your problem. Go and find me a mustard seed from any family in which there has never been a death. The woman was filled with hope and she set off straight away to find such a household. At the first house, the young woman offered to give her some mustard seeds, the young woman who was living in the house. But when Kisa Gotami asked if she had ever lost a family member to death, the young woman said that her grandmother had died a few months ago. Kisa Gotami thanked the young woman and explained why the mustard seeds did not fill the Buddha's requirements. She moved on to the second house. In this house, a husband had died a few years back. The third house had lost an uncle, and the fourth house had lost an aunt. She kept moving from house to house, but the answer was all the same. Every house had lost a family member to death. Kisa Gotami finally came to realize that there's no one in the world who has never lost a family member to death. She now understood that death is inevitable and a natural part of life, and she wasn't unique in her loss. Understanding this, she was able to put aside her resistance and her denial of her son's death, and she buried him in the forest. She then returned to the Buddha and became his follower. Now, in her book, Happiness is an Inside Job, Sylvia Borstein, who is one of the senior teachers at Spirit Rock and who some of you might be familiar with, in the book she tells this story. And at the end of the story, she suggests that she'd like to add a line to this parable, saying, "And then the Buddha and the woman sat together for a while and cried." And I can really understand why she would want to add that line, and I suspect that you can too, because it's so true that even when we understand that death and loss are universal and we're able to accept that this has happened to someone dear to us, it still hurts. It really still hurts. So as we consider this story, certain important points emerge: that death, grief, and loss are universal, and that you're not alone in this experience. And there can be some comfort in this, you know, knowing that this is something that you share with all the rest of humanity. We all have to go through this experience sooner or later. The sense that it isn't something that's unnatural. It's part of this cycle of life. Although, you know, we also have to acknowledge and remember that there are times that death comes about because of conditions that really are horrible. Conditions we definitely would feel should not have happened. And just, you know, to remember that as well. And also that even knowing the universality of loss and death, even with some wisdom and acceptance, it's still painful. So this place of grief and loss, when we face this, it's a place where we really notice those two arrows that that Sue spoke about in her talk earlier this month. You know, the pain of that first grief and first loss, the primary loss, and then all the pain of the reactivity and resistance that can follow. So thinking of this, when we face the death of a loved one or any other major loss, we might consider, you know, the way our feelings divide into two kinds of responses. And the first is that simple pain and shock of the loss, that primary pain and shock of the loss. And, you know, I think this can be really visceral, something you feel physically, you know, the ache in your chest, all the emotional reactions, just being somehow exhausted just because of this strong thing happening. And then there is the secondary reactive response, which can be, you know, denial, pushback, refusal to accept this has happened, the feeling it shouldn't be happening, all the kinds of things that we saw in Kita Gotami in the story. And sometimes there also can be anger and resentment, looking for somebody to blame for this death, maybe blaming yourself, feeling like somebody should have been able to prevent it. And maybe if there's a sense that it was somebody's fault, there might be a desire for revenge coming up too. And another kind of reaction can also be excessive grief, disorientation, feeling like without this person, you're nothing and there's no reason to go on living. Maybe a kind of a grief over the death of your own identity that's bound up with this person, something that Arv talked about last week. And some of this kind of enormous grief is, and kind of a mourning over her identity as a mother, we saw in the story of Kita Gotami too. And these kinds of emotions, you know, this denial, the excessive grief, the anger, we might think of them as, you know, forms of grief that are maybe, we, some of this is likely to occur at any time, but also maybe as a form of grief that's beginning to move in a destructive mode where things are coming out, getting out of balance, and our grief is really perhaps hurting us or maybe moving us to try to hurt others. So this first primary pain, I think it's something that we're going to just feel, you know, the pain of loss, feelings of grief, they're going to be there. They're just going to be there, you know, something to accept. But these second painful feelings, maybe we don't necessarily have to suffer with so much. And we might think of this in the sense that our task in working with grief and facing with grief is to be with this really painful and difficult emotional cycle as fully as we can, with not getting caught up in these destructive extremes. And this can be harder to do in some cases than in others. I think if you lose someone who is quite old or who has been sick for a long time, you know, there is no question that this is sad. No question at all, as you all know who has experienced this. But at the same time, it's not something that's unexpected. It's something that you know is going to happen sooner or later. And so in this knowing, I think there often isn't so much struggle with the fact that it's happening. And there can even be some relief because of a sense that this person was going through a lot of suffering and their suffering maybe is now at an end. And there's not a lot to be angry about, really, even though there is a lot of sadness in missing the person. So this is a place where there may be some kind of acceptance, since it's more the primary grief. Maybe the hardest reactivity is the grief we might feel about the loss of our idea of who we are that's built around that person. You know, that emptiness with the fact that they're gone. Feeling that something critical and crucial is missing from your life. I think that inevitably, you know, we'll feel some of that. I remember, you know, talking with my cousin, with my brother, when our parents died, and, you know, my cousin's parent, my aunt and uncle died, and that feeling that of their being gone, and with their loss, you know, it's like we're on the front lines now. We're the next ones, which is kind of sobering. And but there can also be a really overwhelming grief, you know, a grief, you know, sort of feeling like my life isn't worth living, that maybe is too much, and we have to find enough love for ourselves to allow ourselves to heal from that. It can be harder to find any kind of peace and acceptance if the death was something that we feel was really preventable. Maybe if our loved one was killed in an accident that could have been avoided, maybe through their own self-destructive behavior, or maybe if they were, you know, tragically killed, murdered, or in a war or something like this, you know, where we have the sense that this death came about because of some wrong or unwholesome or unskillful action. And in this situation, I mean, it's really understandable. There's plenty of room for anger and for blame. And feeling these things, I think, is not an unexpected kind of reaction. And yet knowing that even here, we need to know the difference between the anger and blame that are destructive to ourselves too and out of control. And having a clear recognition, you know, that this death was preventable and the product of harmful actions. And enough stability of mind in knowing this that we can actually do something that's wise and useful to prevent it from happening to others. You know, that kind of understanding, as the Buddha says, that hate can never be overcome by hatred. And getting to a place with a death that is one of these kinds of deaths that's really tragic and not what we feel should have happened, I think can be a very, very difficult and painful place. And yet some recognition for this too, that there's a kind of peace that eventually needs to be found. But whatever our situation might be, it's important to acknowledge that grief is a normal process and there isn't any reason to feel that it shouldn't be there. And that it's important to allow ourselves to go through the grieving process. As Susan mentioned in our guided meditation, you know, not to feel that there's something wrong with us, that we aren't being equanimous enough or accepting enough, you know, if we're in pain, but to allow ourselves to feel that pain and let those waves of pain come, you know, as long as they come. I came across a poem by Denise Levertov that really expressed this sense to me very well. Those times when grief is just the way it is for us. And it's called The Eye Mask. And here she's referring to a black eye mask, but it also reminded me of the black of mourning. And this is what she says. In this dark I rest, I'm ready for the light which dawns, day after day, eager to be shared. Black silk shelter me. I need more of the night before I open eyes and heart to illumination. I must still grow in the dark like a root, not ready at all. And that's just how we might feel sometimes in the grief process, like we just need to spend a little more time in the dark before we can open to the day. And even though people might try to tell us we need to accept things, we need to get over it, we need to move on, we're not ready. And, you know, to be willing to allow that process to really see itself through. And I think the practice can be just a huge help in facing and moving through the cycle of grief and loss. For one thing, it provides a context for accepting it, because it helps us to recognize the impermanence of all things. So we see that this isn't something that is outside of our natural experience. And as we recognize this more fully, it's, even though there's sadness, it's easier to be with grief and loss. I remember hearing someone once talk about having had a really deep experience of impermanence in their meditation practice, and then not too long after that, finding that a friend had unexpectedly died. And they talked about how, you know, there was shock, there was sadness, all those emotions were there, all that was there. But yet in the midst of that, there was also this kind of understanding that, yeah, this is the way of things. And so in the midst of the pain, there was a kind of peace. And that's something the practice can give to us. And something else that I think can, in really practical terms, can even be more important is that the practice encourages to just be present for those waves of emotion we feel during the grief process and let them pass through the body however long it takes and let them come and go naturally. And I know, at least for myself, when I've been in a grieving mode, staying with the physical, not getting so wrapped up in the story about the incident, especially if there's some of this kind of feeling of it shouldn't be happening, whose fault, etc. Just being with the physical sensations of grief has really helped me to come to a natural place of balance. And I think maybe others who have experienced that as well. And if we're mindful, we can also notice that we aren't always overwhelmed by grief. That there are times of joy and happiness when we remember that person and really feel our love for them. There are times when our attention is drawn to other beautiful things, or maybe just to everyday things. And there's some sense of the beauty of life in the midst of this sadness. In his poem, Separation, W.S. Merwin says, "Your absence has gone through me like thread through a needle. Everything I do is stitched with its color." And I think it's such a beautiful poem because it brings out that pain of the needle, but the beauty of the color too, which is what grief is really like. Even when we're not actively involved in a grieving process, there are still other practices we can do to help us kind of prepare for the inevitability of grief and loss. And first, it might be helpful to just really consider that fourth reflection. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. And there is no way to escape being separated from them. You know, doing this maybe by stopping to think when you're with a family member or a friend that, you know, it really could be the last time you see this person. You know, you don't know. We don't know what might happen. In my own case, this came home to me with a friend of mine from work. And I'd just seen him, talked to him a couple of days before, and then he went home and he was rushing off to go somewhere. He slipped and fell on the stairs and broke his neck and just died instantly. And this was a person who I saw a lot of, you know, some years ago, but hadn't seen so much of lately because we were busy with different things and we were working in different locations. And after I saw him and talked to him, I thought, oh, well, we'll have to get together soon and catch up, but there's plenty of time. And yeah, there was plenty of time until suddenly there wasn't. You know, it's a shock. And, you know, plenty of time until there isn't is something that can apply to our own lives. And so it can be helpful to reflect that this also could be you. You know, this could be the last time you experience a beautiful spring day or see that old pear tree in your yard burst into bloom one more time. Because we never know. We can't be sure. You know, not in a morbid way, because it can sometimes be too much, but in a gentle way, letting this come up from time to time. And then just kind of noticing the fact of endings, something that can be done in your formal meditation practice. Also in daily life, just taking the time before you get caught up in whatever may be the next thing coming up, that things do end. You know, kind of gently as you're able to do this, as you can open to it. And as we do this, I think with this kind of awareness, as we begin to be a little more open to and recognizing the truth of loss, we find that we have a deeper appreciation of the preciousness of each moment. And, you know, that's the gift of grief and loss. Those cherry blossoms that are always there in those haiku poems, they're so beautiful in part because they are so fleeting. And so it is with our life and the lives of those we love. So let's take a few minutes to just sit together and reflect in our own way on this subject of grief and loss and of the preciousness of every moment. I'd like to close with a few words from the Zen poet Giyun. He says, "The sky now cracks and falls, the earth cleaves open. But in the heart of the fire lies a hidden spring." The sky now cracks and falls, the earth cleaves open. But in the heart of the fire lies a hidden spring. So thank you all so much for your kind attention. And now we have some time for group discussion. For our topic to consider, I would suggest that we each just take a little time to share something, everyone, about your own experience with grief and loss, maybe from the death of a loved one or some other kind of loss that you've had in your life, you know, something you feel comfortable sharing about, and maybe talk a little bit about what helped you to get through this period and what you might have learned, what you feel like you would like to share about your own experience working with grief and loss. And I think looks like everyone is back that's coming back. So, hopefully you had some interesting and productive discussions, and now we have a little bit of time for sharing with the larger group any comments you might have about what you discussed that you would like to bring up, any questions you might have. It's sort of, the floor is open, and maybe you could, sometimes it's a good thing to use that little hand function that's associated with Zoom to make sure that I know that you have a question. But if that doesn't work, you can also like raise your hand maybe here.
The hand is in the reactions button at the bottom. Mm-hmm.
Carol has raised her hand.
So,
oh, yes, right, great. Okay, yes, Carol.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I was.
Oh, Carol Dona.
Yes, yeah, there's two Carols.
There's two Carols.
So one thing that we talked about, well, a couple of things. First of all, the difference between a clean grief and a sticky grief. And how much easier it is to grieve when it's clean.
Yeah.
But then the second thing that we talked about was one thing that makes it unclean is this whole aspect of, I guess, untimely death and the whole thing of not being over control of something you didn't expect that was going to happen, and the fairness of it and the... Then there's all these other, I'm guilty, but guilty says that I could have done something. Mm-hmm. If I couldn't have done something accepting that, then I'm not in control. So it's this bigger issue of loss and unexpected loss as opposed to expected loss.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, and I think what you, one of the things that you brought up in your, as you were speaking of this, was that sense of, even if it's not so much a sense where there's a lot of blame of others, just that sense of, because it's unexpected, the loss of control. And yeah, I think that's very, very true. The shock of that having to come to grips with your loss of control, and that death can happen anytime unexpectedly. Yeah. So that is a very important part of it. You know, even if there's not a lot of anger or this or that, just that larger issue of really understanding how much is out of our control. So thank you for bringing that point up.
Leslie had it.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed about my relationship with dying is that when people, I know a lot of people who have died, and when it's a person who I feel enjoyed their life, used their life in ways that were suited their purposes, I have a much less sense of grief than I have for folks who I feel got trapped in negativity or, you know, kept their hearts small rather than opening. And so really the quality, my feeling about the quality of their life, like it's none of my business, but I have that, those feelings, that when I feel a person has enjoyed their life, I don't experience grief the same way as I do if I don't think they use their life. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's understandable. I think in the sense that the grief is about the loss of the person, but also just sort of about the grief for their suffering during their life. You know, yeah. And I understand too what you're, I feel like within myself too, a sense of if I feel at peace with my life and I don't have a lot of regrets, hopefully meeting death will be easier. It would, I can't imagine that it's ever going to be easy for anyone, but with a sense of not so much regret, it will be easier. So yeah, I can understand that. Thank you very much. And thanks for the people that are noticing, the people that have questions, because I don't always see it. So any more comments?
There we go. I loved your talk, and I wanted to add one more thing about practice that when you said there's plenty of time until there isn't, and I think about the last times we're with somebody before and then they've died, and the practice of being, you know, being appropriate, bringing kindness, bringing generosity. I shared in our group about, you know, when you've been in a relationship for a lot of years, you have your fights, there's a continuum of interaction. And I'm grateful that Bill's and my last interaction was on the sweet, connected, loving end. But there had been times when I would walk out, one of us would walk out of the house and we weren't there.
Yeah.
There's a person who used to be part of Sims, Parker Huey, who lives in Bend now, when she and her husband was an EMT. And I think it was because he was driving this ambulance really fast and he was at risk. But they started this process that before either of them would leave the house, they'd look at each other and they'd say, "Are we okay?" And there was just by asking, "Are we okay?" it like opened up the love. Even if they had just had a spat, you know, which, and so there's a part of our practice that I know for me, it meant a huge thing that Bill's and my last interaction was on the sweet end. And so just share that in, you know, for everybody. It's not only if you're in long-term relationships, all the friendships, you know, where, how did we leave that last interaction? You know, did we stomp off, you know? So yeah. I just wanted anyway, and I so appreciated the tenderness that you offered your words today. Really touched me. Thank you,
Susan. And thank you for your comment too. I mean, that is so true and such a wonderful reminder to, you know, the part of that not knowing is, yeah, to see if we can leave things on a loving note.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that in the interests of finishing on time, this might be a good time to turn things over to Susan for our closing and our announcements. And I want to really thank everyone for being here. And I have the sense that she had a very productive discussions with each other about this topic too. So thank you. And Susan, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Lyndall. And these talks are recorded. Very grateful for that. There are quite a few things coming up. There's a Day of Mindfulness, May 15th, and Narayan will be here May 22nd and 23rd. She will be talking about the Four Noble Truths. Gosh, she has been a longtime partner, Dharma teacher partner with Rodney Smith, our founder, and is incredible. So please, if you've never seen her, go to one of the days or both. And if you have, it's going to be a real treat to have her back. Yeah. Also on May 19th, which is this Wednesday, the Buddhist Essentials class with the local Dharma leaders, Lauren and Jerry, will be talking about the Noble Eightfold Path. And there's no pre-registration for that. You can just enter the room. Also, something new online is we're going to attempt a Vesak ceremony, a ceremony that's held on the full moon of one of the months, May 26th, that celebrates the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and death. It's going to be held at 7 in the morning for 45 minutes. That's all I wanted to say about what's coming up. For those of you who are not familiar, there are sits, drop-in sits almost every day at SIMS. Just go to the online events page. I also pasted in the chat Insight Donate, this remarkable tradition of offering the Dharma freely, as Lauren did so gracefully and graciously. We're carrying on through the tradition now, and now Tuare Salah, our teacher, having graduated from the really venerable process, that she is now in the lineage, and it really touches me to say that we have a continuation of this beautiful spiritual practice, and Donna is the way we continue it. So please give what you can. And I would just offer,
Susan, just to remind people, we will not be meeting next Sunday because of Narayan's retreat. So even if you choose not to go to the retreat, there will not be a Sunday sit.
Yes. Thank you so much, Suze. You're welcome. So if we could end in reflection and stillness, and I'll offer a few words of metta. Knowing that we don't practice just for ourselves, we practice for all beings. May we accept the things we cannot change. May we accept the natural unfolding of life and be available to the 10,000 sorrows and the 10,000 joys. And in Tuare's words, may the reality of death open us all to our human life.